This episode of The Family Gamers is sponsored by Druid City Games. Head over to druidcitygames.com to get more information about their game Barnyard Roundup out right now and their upcoming Kickstarter for The Grim Forest, which starts on March 21st. druidcitygames.com.
And welcome to episode 40 of the Family Gamers Podcast.
Back in my day,
the Family Gamers are over the hill.
I am your co-host, Anitra.
And I'm Andrew.
The old guy over there is Andrew.
Yeah, I am indeed the old guy, Andrew. We are recording a day late this week because we had a fun time yesterday involving the urgent care facility.
Yeah, So anyone who tells you that nursemaid's elbow is really common in toddlers and is not a big deal, it's true that it's really common in toddlers, but for ours it was a big deal.
It hurts.
It hurts, and it's still not completely fixed now. So we have another trip to the doctor coming up tomorrow.
So that was super fun, but yeah. we are still here, and we are bringing episode 40 to you this week. Last week was awesome. It was kind of our kickoff of our developer interviews.
Mm-hmm.
Next week, we're going to have all of the developer interviews from PAX East, which is going to be great. So those are actually available on the website now.
I was going to say, so if you haven't caught those on the website already,
they'll be right in the
they'll
podcast.
They'll be in the podcast next week. Yep.
So that'll be pretty sweet. This week, we are going to talk specifically about something that we've mentioned a lot on the show.
Yeah, which is playing games cooperatively.
Right.
Playing games together.
So we'll talk a little bit about some games that we've talked about before, but we're also going to mention a bunch of stuff that I don't think we have actually brought up on the show. A lot of video games this week, weirdly.
Yeah, well, that's because we talk about cooperative board games fairly often.
Right. Okay, that's fair. So we will be talking about that after the break, but before the break, we've been playing a lot of games.
So, before you went to PAX East, we had a quick chance to try out Fight for Olympus.
Yes.
Which is a two-player game from
Mayfair Games.
Mayfair. I really enjoyed this game. And then did you say you played it more?
I did. I brought it to PAX, and I played it a couple times with a few different people, and I continue to really like it.
Yeah, it's fun. It's really well-balanced in the way that a two-player only game generally has to be.
Right.
So that you never feel like the other player's getting way out ahead. Like, it's usually pretty close up until the end.
Right. There's a lot of kind of jockeying back and forth.
Yeah.
So we are going to do a full formal review of Fight for Olympus on the site. But the kind of the quick preview on the show, I mean, obviously we just mentioned that we both like it.
Yeah.
It's a little bit magic-like in that you're kind of casting spells, but you're discarding cards in your hand to put out other cards to do it.
Yeah. Basically you're setting out fighters of various kinds to battle against each other, or if they don't battle, you get bonuses.
Right. So instead, so the way the board is laid out, there's kind of six slots that you would kind of put your creatures or people in to battle against the other side. And if there's nobody blocking whomever it is on the other side, you don't deal damage to the opponent, but you get some sort of bonus.
So
one of them
on
is moving a victory point balance marker closer to you. One of them is the ability to draw more cards, and one of them is the ability to gather up more resources to put out more cards to do other things.
Yep.
And so there's not kind of this weird kind of crunchy thing where you're counting out life totals or you're spinning a 20-sided die or something like that, but it's pretty obvious as the game flows back and forth how the power is transitioning back and forth between the two players.
Yes.
And it's not a super, super deep game. So like a really hardcore, you know, Magic the Gathering player would think, oh, this is kind of light. But at the same time, the nice thing about it not being super deep is that if you aren't really into that stuff, you could still enjoy it.
Rather than light, I prefer to think of it as streamlined.
Okay. That's fair. That's fair.
Because it's not exactly a casual game. The theme is a little deeper and
okay, sure. It's a little crunchy in that sense.
But you're not dealing with a lot of fiddly bits.
Right. Yep.
So I enjoyed it a lot. I'm looking forward to playing it some more before we write up a formal review.
Indeed. Yeah. I'm very pleased with that game.
Yeah. What else? You came home from PAX East with Suspend Junior.
Right. So we've talked about Suspend on the show before, I think.
Yeah. I think we mentioned it the first time when your sister brought it for a holiday.
Right.
Wild back.
Sure.
Yeah. And we enjoyed it. But you ended up coming home this time with Suspend Junior, which is definitely a little easier than mm-hmm. Suspend.
Mm-hmm.
So if the idea of that sort of kinetic sculpture... Dexterity game, right. Appeals to you, but you're like, I don't know, man. That sounds kind of difficult for my kids. Suspend Junior is totally the way to go.
Right. I also picked up another game while I was there. I picked up this Batman dice. I don't know exactly what it's called, but it's like it's basically zombie dice, but mm-hmm. it was rethemed with Batman the Animated Series characters, and it's really neat because the way it works is you're kind of each person is one of the villains, and each villain has a slightly different special ability, which will affect some of the cards. Like Mr. Freeze, let's see if I can remember this. Oh no, Mr. Freeze is a special character, so we've never played with him. But Catwoman, the first blue bat symbol that appears. Mm-hmm. Has no effect. You can put it to the side, and so in zombie dice, if you get 3 shotgun blasts, you're done.
Yeah.
In this Batman dice, if you get 3 bat symbols, then you're quote caught, and so then you move on to the next player. So it's very much the same rules, except there's a little bit of a twist with the different characters, and obviously it's Batman. So I mean, come on.
I mean, we kind of
right,
love Batman.
Exactly. So that's one I think the kids are going to like playing a lot. I don't even know if we played it with them yet, but
no, we haven't yet.
But that might replace zombie dice for them.
I kind of hope so.
So, yeah, good game.
Batman's a lot more socially acceptable with small children.
Brains.
As well. What else? We tried out a trivia game called Wise Alec.
Yeah.
There'll be a full review of that coming up on the site sometime soon. Suffice to say, Wise Alec is a trivia game along the same lines as sort of like a Trivial Pursuit, but designed so that you can level the playing field between adults and children.
Right. Right. So
and varying difficulty levels, shall we say.
So the board for Wise Alec really is just a mechanism for you to kind of move around and land on different colors to ask different themed questions.
That's why it made me think
just
of Trivial Pursuit.
Well, in Trivial Pursuit, you're trying to get the wedges.
Right, true.
So this is just kind of a thing where you're like, well, maybe I'll roll a die. It's roll a die, right?
Yeah.
And it's, I move 5. So let me look in every possible way that I can move 5 and see what colors I might want to land on.
Yeah.
And then you land on a color. And then each of the questions has a 3-point or a 7-point
question.
Yeah. And so what we did, and we've talked about rule shifting on the show before, but for us, the adults had to answer the harder question.
Yes.
And we only got 5 points.
Yes. The children
or
were
something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, we only got 5 points. And then the children were allowed to choose,
mm-hmm.
Which for our son meant he chose the easiest one every time.
Right.
But for our daughter, she realized that the topical type questions, she would go with a 3-pointer. But since she's really well-read and really good at spelling, she would always pick the 7-point questions for spelling.
And there's another, one of the categories is like dexterity stuff or like silly stuff.
It's silly stuff, yeah. And sometimes you get points and sometimes you lose points.
Right. And so that's kind of, I mean, it sort of injects a little bit of a different spin in the game. If you land on one of those things, you're like, yeah, let's try something different and see what happens.
More chance.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that's definitely a fun little game. I don't know that that's, blowing anybody's minds or anything like that, but it's a nice, solid family game.
Well, yeah, it's a good family game, and it sort of scratches that itch for a trivia game that the whole family can play.
Right.
I mean, down to about 6 years old, I'd say. No younger than that.
Right.
But
and the nice thing about it is, some of the questions are like legitimately educational. And so you can use those opportunities to kind of explain things like what were the 3 different types of columns in ancient Greece? Right.
Yeah.
And, the answers are Corinthian, Ionic, and Doric. but then you can kind of describe what those look like or maybe draw the, and that's not part of the game, but that's sort of part of that opportunity to play as you're playing with your kids and doing something a little bit sort of educational, but it's not an educational game.
Yeah.
And that's something that I really like.
Yeah. So that was enjoyable as mm-hmm. a family. we tried out Extraordinaire's Design Studio.
Yeah, we did. I'm excited for the coverage awesome. that we're gonna do with this.
It was really awesome. And I cannot recommend it enough.
Mm-hmm.
We'll leave it at that. We've talked about it before.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there'll be a link in the show notes to check it out on Amazon. It's about $40 for the design studio that we have.
But it is so awesome, guys.
It really is.
It's so awesome.
We are going to... This is a true story. I have contracted a professional videographer, and we're going to make a little video about us and our experiences with Extraordinaires.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
So that's going to be pretty neat.
Let's see. What else I got here? We started playing through some games that are not out yet, but are coming out from the rebranded Hoyle Play.
Right. I think brand. We might have talked about, we had played the first one, I think, when we last recorded, but now we've played all three.
They're fine. I think we're going to play them some more and see if maybe adjusting the rules from what's given will improve them a little.
I think we wanted to enjoy them more than we did.
Yeah.
Is kind of where we're at with those.
I will say these games aren't even out yet, but they're definitely designed for preschool, kindergarten age,
right.
And not really any older than
right.
And that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
I do want to say, our review for Sushi Dice has now made it out on the site.
Yes.
And we had talked about it on the show before, and we were kind of down on Sushi Dice. Like, it wasn't really... We didn't love it.
It was fine, but it was just a little difficult to play.
Yeah, there were just some usability things that were weird. And we played it with our co-writers, and they kind of felt largely the same way that we did.
Yeah.
But one of our co-writers, one of our contributing writers, she hosts a game-playing group at the middle school that she teaches at.
Yes, and I can't wait to get her on the show to talk about that. But
right.
that's probably not going to happen until this summer.
That's going
to
happen probably this summer. But I could not believe the feedback.
Her kids at the school... absolutely love it, to the point that one of her kids got to go to PAX East and came back with another copy of Sushi Dice, so
right.
they could have more copies to play at their school game club.
Right. And so the thing I love about that is, you know, this is a different perspective on this game, right? It's
yep.
it's a bunch of middle school kids, and I mean, they had absolutely no strings attached or whatever, and they just organically started to play the game and absolutely loved it. And so I think it's incumbent on us to make that note that, you know, these middle school kids really with little assistance from the teacher picked this game up, figured the game out pretty organically. I mean, obviously they're old enough to read, and just loved it. I don't know, maybe they just like hitting the bell.
That could be some of it, but I think it's got that, it does have that neat sort of give and take. It's two player, but not really.
Mm-hmm.
It's two player, but people can jump in and
invested. I guess that kind of that small mechanic of take that gameplay is really appealing to a middle school child.
Oh yeah, definitely. but I do think that's one of the things that Sushi Dice does really well,
uh-huh.
is that it's not an overwhelming amount. It's not just the content like, oh ho, I got you. No, I got you.
You mean Munchkin?
Like among other games. I mean, honestly, checkers can devolve into that.
Okay.
If you're not doing it well.
Sure.
But it's got just enough.
Sure.
So that it's like, oh, hey, if I really pay attention, hey, you both got yuck.
Gross or whatever the term is.
Now it's my turn.
Right. And, you know, I mean, it really is kind of a commentary on the fact that some games are not for some people.
Yep. Definitely. So I won't say that we rescind our previous opinion,
right.
but
I think that having more information and more thoughts from different types of people is telling. And
so
there you go.
You guys, anybody listening, you should check out Liz's Sushi Dice review.
Yep.
Liz Ray.
Where is that?
On the familygamers.com.
familygamers.com/reviews.
So we got a couple more that we've played. We grabbed Potion Explosion for iOS.
Yeah, so I had tweeted this out. So we had Spencer and Lara on the show, and I don't remember if it was when we were on their show or they were on our show, but they had mentioned this game from Cool Mini or not called Potion Explosion, which
it sounded fun, but
yeah, it sounded cool. It actually sounded really interesting, and I saw it at PAX East.
Okay,
and basically what Potion Explosion was and is sort of like a way to bring a Bejeweled or a Candy Crush or something into the real world.
Right.
Right. And to sort of emulate that gameplay with a tabletop game. Mm-hmm. And then ironically, they turned it into an iOS game.
Yeah, a little bit of irony there. But it means that it's a great way. You can drop $3 and decide if this is a game.
I don't know if it's still on sale or not. It's probably not. So it's going to be $6, I think.
$6?
$5, $6. I think it's normally $4.99.
Going out and buying a new copy of the board game. And then putting in all the effort to punch out all the pieces and get everything.
Well, I think that stuff's fun, but I'm weird.
But not everybody does. So,
so I
try it out on iOS first.
It's really good.
It's really fun.
Like, I expected you to be like, oh, it's another Bejeweled. I was like, this is a really good game. I mean,
it's got good mechanics.
So, yeah, so the primary mechanic is exactly like a Bejeweled. Well, actually, no, it's not really.
It's not really like a Bejeweled, but instead of being a match and play, it's a take stuff out, and when the column collapses, if the two jewels
that impact each other are the same color, those come off too.
Yeah.
That's the explosion. But, and then you create these potions, and the potions give you special abilities to do certain things like pull individual marbles out, or you know,
steal
everything.
Other people's marbles,
exactly.
Or, yeah.
Or lose your marbles, like me.
Ha.
Whatever. But it's a fun game. I liked it.
Yeah. And the iOS app allows for pass and play. So.
I know. I saw that. So, that's going to happen.
You and I haven't had a chance for that yet. But
you're going down.
No way, man. I've been beating the easy computer.
Yeah. I could beat the easy computer now.
Are you sure?
Uh-huh.
Okay. All right.
We'll update you next show.
Ooh.
Yeah. Oh, it sounds like we need to take a break right now.
Speaking of take that gameplay. no. We went to a dinner party and pulled out Anomia.
Yeah, we did.
Fun to play.
Great game. Love it.
People who are like, I don't know about this whole game thing. I guess.
Right.
And they come out going like, wow, that was really fun. Like, that was laughing.
It was a good time. And I mean, you know, there were four of us that were in our 30s. And then a 40-year-old and a 60-year-old.
Semi-retired. Yeah. I don't know how.
So transcended age groups, you know.
Yeah.
To some degree.
For the most part, except for a few things like '70s TV show.
Blogs. Hey, I got the '70s TV show.
Yes, but you were the only person under 40 who could come up with one.
You know what?
Saying.
You know what?
Just because you watch too much Nick and Knight.
You know 600-year-old music. I don't want to hear it. Anyway, what else we got?
And you went somewhere with the boy child, and
the boy child.
He got to play a bunch of rounds of Outfoxed, huh?
Yeah, we did. And so that was kind of funny. I was sort of the game manager, right? So I wasn't actually playing, but I was kind of making sure that people were doing what they were supposed to do. Sure. And there was an adult, two millennials, and a six-year-old playing.
Nice.
And I think everybody had fun.
Okay.
I mean, you know, the 40-year-old was like, oh, yeah, this is cute. Oh, look at that. Oh, okay, cool. Funny. You know.
I'm going to spend time with, you know, with
these
kids.
But it wasn't, I'm playing Candyland. I want to stab myself in the face, which is really what's important.
You know, this is mildly amusing. Okay.
And when we had that game night at our church, I had mentioned that we basically destroyed the game, right? That was really just a function of exactly how it all worked out.
Sure.
Because this time, it went a little bit longer.
Okay.
It wasn't, I mean, I don't think there was too much difficulty because a 40-year-old, two 20-year-olds, I mean, strategy-wise, there's not a whole lot going on, but it did last a little bit longer, and it was a little bit more engaging. There were some times when the fox moved, all that stuff, exactly mm-hmm. like everybody would expect, you know, in a game that actually has some back and forth, so it was good. It was really good.
And then video games. We have been playing Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, lots of it. We have. If for anybody who is aware, we have the left Joy-Con sync issue with our Switch.
But
so that's a bummer.
You, the same day that you sent it off for repair, you were able to get a Pro Controller, so we don't have to stop playing Zelda.
Yes!
Yay!
And Zelda, not to... you know, spoiler alert, but Zelda's going to come up in the second half of the show, so we're just going to leave that there.
Our 8-year-old and 6-year-old have been playing Zelda Wind Waker.
Yes, my 6-year, my See, Claire, 8-year-old. My 8-year-old is quite put out that I won't let her play Breath of the Wild until she beats Wind Waker HD.
She's like, I'm never going to do it. And so she's trying to squeeze in time to play Zelda around school projects.
Good.
And things like that.
Good. Make her work for it. Actually, I'm less concerned now that we have the Pro Controller.
I understand. But she's also helping her little brother
right.
Play as well.
Right, yeah, we all know how that goes.
Yeah.
How's that cooperative gameplay going?
You know what? He's okay with it, and so I'm not going to stop them.
Right.
They also still love playing Mario Kart Smash Brothers. Anytime somebody comes over, they
yep.
like, play Super Smash Brothers.
Yeah, that's the kind of the go-to game for them.
Yeah.
So, or Nintendo Land. They play some Nintendo Land.
They also play a lot of Nintendo Land. That's true.
Yep. So.
Hey, we made it through our big list of games we played.
All right. You know, for 2 weeks, that's an awful lot of games. It's almost really like is. we're gamers or something. It's crazy.
Something like that.
So, all right. So, we are going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we are going to talk about cooperative games.
Playing games cooperative.
Playing together.
Aww.
True. Families that play together stay together.
That's true. As long as they're not at each other's throats because they're too competitive.
Yeah. Well, I say that in the context of cooperative games. Not
fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
So
so we ended off the first half of the program talking about how you and I have both been playing Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Right.
We both enjoy it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And we're finding that although it's not necessarily a game I would like to sit there and watch you play for hours on end.
Right.
I do enjoy watching it. It gives me some ideas of what to do in my own gameplay. And we end up helping each other out with the puzzles.
Yeah, so it was probably maybe a week and a half after the game came out, after the Switch came out, that a friend of ours came over. And I think we talked about this on the last show, where he had his Switch and was playing Zelda Breath of the Wild on the couch, and we were playing on the TV. And then he would get stuck in a puzzle, and we'd just take our Switch out of the dock and put his Switch in the dock.
And show up on the TV and be like, oh, what if you try this?
Yeah, it was kind of an... I expected it to be a much more awkward experience than it was. It turned out to be really seamless and awesome and fun. And basically since then, we've become collaborators.
Yeah, we've been taking
in our respective
collaborative
games.
Approach.
Right. And I think that's been really awesome. I mean, it particularly works in a game like this because the game is so huge and there's so many different ways to do so many different things.
Yes.
That you can do something, you know, it's not like a game where I can't watch you because you're ahead of me and I'm going to get to the place
Spoiler
where you are.
Alert.
Exactly. There's just so much going on that that we both really can benefit from watching each other play. And so that becomes a really neat collaborative experience.
Yeah.
When we're watching each other.
I have always felt that I benefit from watching you in particular do boss fights because I'm not good at them. And so if I don't have to struggle to figure out what I'm supposed to do,
right.
but instead just have to worry about how am I actually going to do it, it makes it a little bit more enjoyable for me.
Well, and I also think, and this is really where this is kind of going, I guess, is sort of once you're in a place and you kind of have this kind of attitude of cooperative or collaborative gameplay, even in a game that is ostensibly a single-player game,
yeah.
it kind of naturally leads into a lot of other things. Like, if you know that I'm kind of open to this collaborative gameplay, then you're going to be a lot more likely, if I'm struggling with something, to be like, I'm going to take a look online and see how you're supposed to do this. And then you'll say, hey, do you want to know?
Yeah. And I'll try not to give you more information than you want.
Right. And just, you know, because those doors have been opened, it kind of allows some of those other things to happen a lot more organically. And I think that that's really the value of something like that. Even with a game like this that's single player, it really becomes a much more social experience.
Yeah. My personal favorite is solving the puzzles together.
Sure.
Because those shrines in Breath of the Wild, some of them are really simple and obvious. Some of them are not.
Do you want to know how many there are in the game?
I know there's a lot.
There's over 120.
Okay. I think I've made it to 12.
No, you've made it to more than that.
Come Less on. Than 16.
Really?
Yes.
I'm probably around 25.
Yeah. You've done more gameplay, and you've also been seeking out the shrines a lot more than I have.
Yeah. Well, whatever.
But, yeah. But, again, because the game is so big, I've gotten to some shrines that you haven't seen. You've gotten to some shrines that I haven't seen. And there's overlap, but it's not like we're doing everything in the same order and in the same way.
Right. Right. I mean, this is kind of the perfect game for this example, right? I mean, yes, it happens to be the game that we're playing right now, but when we're talking about this sort of this single player becoming cooperative or collaborative mm-hmm. kind of dynamic, this literally, I mean, it's the perfect game for this kind of scenario.
Well, and it kind of brings me back to, I won't say childhood playing games because I didn't have that much, but like my teenage years playing games, because I remember talking to friends and being like, hey, can you figure out how to do this thing? Because I'm like, I can't quite figure it out.
Right.
And this is, you know, before it was really common for there to be, you know, solutions all over the internet and walkthroughs and all of that sort of thing.
Right. None of that stuff existed.
Yeah. So I'm definitely feeling some of that kindred spirit again of playing a one player game together.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's funny you say that because that really brings me back to the days with the original Legend of Zelda, where it was like, all right, you got to sit down with me, like, what's going on? Or, hey, if you go to that random wall over there and drop a bomb on it, go do it right now. Check it out. Oh, look, there's a cave there. You can go in there and do something. Right. Or in Super Punch-Out, right? Where it's like, I mean, that game was so brutally difficult.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, yes. Mike Tyson's Punch-Out or whatever they...
Whatever it is, yes.
Whatever they call the other one. And that game was so brutally difficult that, like, I would sit there and I would play and then I would lose and I'd hand off the controller. And it was a social experience to play this single-player game.
Yeah.
And, you know, as we've gotten older and as sort of my career as a games journalist has grown, I did video game stuff for a long time. And then, you know, as our kids got a little bit older and I wanted to incorporate them into this world, that's why we brought...
Yeah.
That's why we started doing tabletop
stuff.
That's
why we do a lot... We usually talk a lot more about board games.
Right.
Because not every video game can be social.
Right.
And it also depends on the people playing. I mean, 3 years ago, when we were just starting to kind of get the ideas for Family Gamers going...
Right.
Our oldest kids were 5 and 3.
Right.
So... were they playing video games? Yeah, kind of a little, but not the kind of thing where the two of them would collaborate and say, well, what if you do it this way? Well, what if you do it this way?
Exactly.
And I am not just you and I doing it with things like Breath of the Wild. I'm watching them do it now too. Most notably with, I want to say it's Super Mario 3D World.
Okay. Yeah. They're playing that a bit.
They've been playing that a bit. And they kind of trade back and forth of like, oh, hey, have you gone over here and tried this thing? Oh, the way you get to this star is to do, you know, is to do that. Now, Super Mario 3D World is a little different in that it's designed to be played either single player or cooperatively.
Uh-huh.
You can do it as a team of up to four players.
Which I think is fun. I like it when all four of us play and we kind of let the kids lead us.
Or once in a while kind of drag them along.
Yeah.
Be like, wait, there's a star over here. But the two of them are also playing it a lot single player and then just giving each other tips, which I really love to see.
Right. Yeah, I mean, look, we grew up in a world where online didn't exist really at all. I mean, the internet became like a thing when we were in high school, right? And so as we sort of look at what multiplayer gaming has become, now multiplayer gaming primarily is defined by online multiplayer gaming. And we talk a lot about tabletop games because we're really focusing on that social aspect as a family. But the reality is that it's not the medium that's the problem, right? If you have an isolating experience that's something like reading, I mean, reading is great, and I love reading, and there's a lot of great things about reading. But if you read too much, it can become an isolating thing. Usually people use it as an escape.
That's the story of my childhood.
Yeah, yeah, but what I'm saying is usually that's the escape. That's the effect, not the cause, right? So, sure. So I guess my point is that video games are viewed in this negative light as this really isolating thing where somebody will lose themselves into a game and they do all this crazy stuff.
We got the stereotype of, you know, some 20-year-old guy living in his parents' basement playing,
with, you know, Doritos and Mountain Dew. And
yeah. And it doesn't matter if he's playing Call of Duty or if he's playing World of Warcraft. It's all kind of viewed the same way.
Right. And
Minecraft, any of that.
And the issue is not the medium, right? The issue is the fact that it is that isolation. And so... You know, that led us to go to the tabletop world. But now we're really seeing, and it, you know, it's really been kind of coming on a little bit stronger, I think, over the last couple of years. But a reintroduction of couch co-op.
Yes.
Right? And a reintroduction of those kinds of games that really really support collaborative, if not cooperative, at least collaborative gameplay.
Yeah, definitely. Maybe this is the right time to mention some of our favorite games that were designed specifically with co-op play in mind, co-op play in mind. So these kind of fall into two general categories. One are games where there is some sort of a campaign-based game or a multiplayer-based game that also has a cooperative mode. This includes things like Gears of War, which I don't play, but you do.
Right.
And you usually play it cooperatively with a friend.
Yep. In person.
Yes, cooperatively in person with a friend, I should say. Sitting on the same couch, yelling at each other as you...
Yell at each other. Most of the time right now, Gears of War 4, we're making fun of Dom, because of Marcus Fenix, because he says really, really...
dumb stuff.
Well, it's just, I mean, he's a trope.
Okay, fair enough. I've heard the same thing is true of the Call of Duty games, that they have a couch co-op as well.
I believe you. I'm not really into multiplayer shooters. Yeah. Halo is a great example of a game that you can go up to.
You can do the campaign.
With some of them, you can go up to 4-player couch co-op campaign.
So you can do the same campaign single player or cooperatively in Halo. But then there's the, and I would be remiss not to mention our personal favorite in this category, which is Portal 2.
Portal 2. That game is so good.
I never did the single player in
you
Portal
should do it.
2. You
it's,
did.
It's great.
I watched you do some of it, and it's great. Portal 2 Cooperative is a completely different game than the Portal 2 single player
game.
Yes,
it is.
And it's fantastic. We'll leave it at that. but then there's this other category of game that is specifically designed as a two-player cooperative game.
Sometimes more than two. It could be more
than
two.
Sometimes more than two.
But
fair enough. Right. But games that are specifically designed to be a cooperative game, not a single-player experience.
Right.
I think probably the flagship in my mind for this is the game called Never Alone.
Okay. Never Alone you can play single-player.
You can play it single-player, but it's designed to be two-player. But Never Alone is this interesting sort of melding of Inuit folklore, and you're a girl, and the second player is a magical seal.
Wolf. Yeah, Never Alone in general is an amazing game/experience because everything it's Inuit folklore, and they worked really closely with the Inuit tribes to make sure that everything they did was as accurate as possible. In between levels, they actually have clips of interviews, which it makes it feel like this weird kind of Discovery Channel style game.
This is an educational game for adults.
It's fascinating. Really, like, seriously, it's so cool. It's gorgeous.
It's really neat.
It's so neat. You can play it single player as the girl, and then the wolf kind of follows you around like as a spirit animal, or you can play it two player and one of you can be the wolf. I mean, at this point, the game's probably like $5 on digital, whatever.
Yeah,
it's really a neat game.
PS4,
something. I don't know.
It's long enough ago. It might have been PS3, but that was a really enjoyable two-player experience mm-hmm. that was obviously designed to be two-player experience.
Right. It was a side-scrolling platformer.
Yeah. Portal 2 kind of straddles the line. There's a few others in this category. There's Lovers in a Dangerous Space-Time.
Which I love. I adore that game.
You've seen and talked about. I haven't really.
So Lovers in a Dangerous Space-Time, you have a sphere-shaped ship, right? And you're trying to travel through space to get from point A to point B.
Sure.
The problem is there's more stations on the ship than there are people to control the things on the ship. And sometimes you could put certain things on like autopilot, mm-hmm. But there's still more stations than there are places for you to control. And so you're looking at what's kind of like a profile shot of the ship, mm-hmm. right? And so as you're traveling through space, there's these creatures that are kind of, I mean, it's all highly stylized, sure. right? So it doesn't look realistic really at all. But there's all these creatures that are trying to attack the ship or things that you might crash into and all the things. So you have to run from station to station, you know, directing the ship, making sure it's going in the right direction, going to guns to shoot things or guns on the other side to shoot other things. And you're kind of running, but you have to work cooperatively. You have to, you know, physically communicate with the person sitting on the couch next to you and tell them where to go and what to do.
Because there's more there than one person could possibly do.
There's more there than two people could possibly do unless they're communicating with each other and they know where they're going.
Sure.
Because if you both end up going towards the same gun, well, now you're wasting a resource.
Yeah.
So it's really, really cool in that way. Another great example of that is a game that's fairly recent called Overcooked. And Overcooked is this really, really neat game where you're all working in a kitchen. And you're trying to serve up orders and sometimes the orders have multiple pieces. And so like you're preparing the vegetables while I'm trying to cook up the lobster and it's all kind of going nuts. And there's a bunch of orders and you kind of have to prepare different parts of multiple orders at the same time so that you can do it all efficiently. But you all have to collaborate.
So it's got some of that like diner kitchen simulator.
Yeah, thing, but designed
that it has to be multiplayer to make it work.
Yeah.
That sounds awesome.
It's zany. I've heard, people get really far in that and then get to the point where they're going to get divorced if they keep playing this game. You know, it's that style of craziness.
Well, that is actually the stereotype about like professional kitchens is that it's a super high stress environment.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's totally what they're going for.
Neat.
So I haven't actually bothered to spend the money on that, but I think it's going to happen sometime soon, especially with the look on your face right now.
I'm thinking of a game that you just recently told me about. That speaking of high stress environments and something that needs to be multiplayer is a game you were telling me about called Think of the Children.
Yeah, actually, one of the interviews that is going to be on the podcast next week is from one of the guys from the company that is releasing.
So just give a super short synopsis and then you can hear more next week.
Yeah. So Think of the Children is a
parenting simulator.
It's a co-op parenting simulator. There's this kind of loose plot around this game, which is that, the child protective services, CPS, whatever it's called, is like threatening to take your children away. So you kind of have to prove that you're good parents. Like that's the loose plot. We didn't even see that plot on the show floor at PAX. That was just kind of what was explained as we were talking to the guy, Adric, who was there. But you go through these different scenarios where it's a single shot, right? So it's this kind of isometric view. And the first one that we played with was in a backyard. There's an open pool and there's a barbecue. And so the kids are playing.
This already sounds bad.
Yeah. And so you've got these kind of like side goals, like how many hot dogs can you cook? How many, you know, hamburgers can you cook? How many, all these different various things. And the kids are running around playing and you've got to like keep them out of the pool and keep them from running into the street or jumping into the barbecue and like all this crazy stuff while you're trying to get stuff out of the house so you can, you know, put it on the grill and all these.
Oh, man.
Yeah, there's just too many things for two people to do, but there's only two of you.
Hey, sounds like real life.
Right. And then the next one is a beach scene.
Okay.
Right. Where I don't remember what you're trying to build sandcastles or something. You're trying to do some kind of, you have these random tasks, but these kids are like running into the water, trying to get up, like, you know, falling holes on the beach, like all this crazy stuff where kids are going to get hurt or killed or whatever.
Right.
And then the final one is actually in a supermarket and you have a shopping list and you're trying to shop for all this stuff, but the kids are climbing up stuff and, you know, what do they call them? Not bookshelves. The shelves can like fall down on the kids if you let them climb up too high. But there's also like if you discipline them too much, there's also There's like an embarrassment meter. So if the kids get too loud, you'll get embarrassed and they'll throw you out of the store. Oh, there's just like all these like pieces moving
this
around.
This is too realistic. It makes me think of how grocery shopping is when I
That's the whole point. But children. It's just like, and I mean, it was so funny as I was standing there watching to see like two 18-year-old, like an 18, like, you know, a guy and a girl, like a couple, and they sit down to play this game and they just like crash and burn. And I'm not saying I'd be any better. I'm just, right. And they get up and they're like, well, I guess we're terrible parents, you know. But amusingly enough, that game's coming out on Mother's Day.
That's funny.
So I highly recommend you check out that interview.
Pro tip, don't buy it for your mom.
I don't know. Maybe I will buy it for my
only,
mom.
If you're thinking about it, buy it for your mom as a, I'm so sorry at what you had to put up with, mom. Let me apologize to you.
So that's another one that I'm looking forward to.
All right. So there are lots of kinds of games that allow for team play.
Mm-hmm.
Trivia games, some of the music games, although it's been a while since a really good new music game has come out. Racing games sometimes, especially of the more childish variety. I'm thinking like Mario Kart. And one of your personal favorites, Rocket League.
Rocket League is a good game. I like it quite a bit.
And it's fun to play as a team, right?
It is.
That's another form
I'm the worst
couch
player on every team.
Only when our children aren't playing. If it's all adults, you may be the worst player.
Maybe.
But only if our children are not playing and if I'm not playing.
I am no good at that game.
I think I am worse than our children. I'm really, really, really bad at that game. But it's fun. I think I might be all out of video games to talk about.
Okay.
So, we talk about cooperative board games a lot more often.
Yeah, we do. I mean, I think that, you know, most of the stuff on our cooperative board game list is stuff that we really mentioned before. We've got kind of classics. Forbidden Island, Forbidden Desert are classic game right games that are cooperative. Then you move up to like a Pandemic.
Yep.
It's going to be a little bit more complicated. There is a game that we don't have, so we haven't talked about it much, but I played it called Flashpoint Fire Rescue.
I've heard good things about that one.
I think you might have played it once.
Maybe.
You play as firefighters and you're trying to rescue people from a burning building.
Yeah.
And there's a bunch of add-ons for that game. I really like that game a lot. It's pretty fun.
There's the game we love to hate. Shadows over Camelot.
If you're really, really crunchy, there's also games like Z-Pocalypse.
Yep.
Which are extremely difficult. I actually saw Z-Pocalypse 2 at PAX East.
Oh, yeah?
And the guy presenting said, yeah, we wanted to make it harder.
And you're like, you're crazy.
We don't survive in
Day
the regular
one.
Game of Z-Pocalypse. So, you know, games like that do exist. We're not really into the zombie thing. Z-Pocalypse is hard enough.
There's a few horror-themed ones as well, right? Again, not
Betrayal
really in
the
our
House
wheelhouse.
On Haunted Hill, I think, is considered a cooperative game as well. Yeah, so there's definitely some stuff like that that we don't talk about a lot. Pandemic Legacy, we talked about. Pandemic Legacy Season 2 is coming out. I saw pictures of that at Toy Fair this year.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the whole suite of RPGs. You can get something like Mice and Mystics, which comes in a box.
Which
everything
sets
is
it all
there
out for
it's
you.
Got miniatures. It's got, you know, boards for each each section.
Yep. There's Robot Riddle, which we've talked about in the past, which leans much more heavily on the storytelling aspect, mm-hmm. but it is a cooperative role playing game.
Right, and if you go way back. We also had
in our first couple episodes we talked about Hero Kids.
We talked about Hero Kids, which is basically like a D&D style RPG for kids.
Yeah.
So it removes some of the stuff that's slightly questionable and streamlines the mechanics quite a bit. And that's a pretty good game as well. And there's a few other games kind of in that realm. You can go to drivethruRPG.com and check out the family RPGs on there. And a lot of that stuff is going to fall under the same kind of banner as something like Hero Kids.
We would love to hear from you, our listening audience. What kind of games do you like to play cooperatively or collaboratively if it's not really a cooperative game?
Yeah, especially if it breaks the mold. I'd love to hear.
We would love to hear. Please tell us on our Facebook page.
Facebook.com/FamilyGamersAAA. Just find the post for episode 40 and leave us a couple of comments.
Or tell us on Twitter.
Twitter.com/FamilyGamersAA.
Or you can always leave a comment on the show post on our website, thefamilygamers.com.
Yep. That's a good place to go.
So I think that's it for our show this week. I am Anitra at thefamilygamers.com.
I am Andrew at thefamilygamers.com.
Don't forget to go rate and review the Family Gamers podcast on iTunes.
Yes, please.
We depend on your ratings to help more people find the show.
Absolutely. And stay tuned for next week when we have a bunch of cool developer interviews from PAX East.
I'm super looking forward to it. It includes an interview with Andrew Innes, the man who created Anomia and Duple.
And the upcoming Anomia Kids.
Ooh, fun.
Yep.
It includes Think of the Children, as you already mentioned. With
Adric Polkingholm.
And a few other goodies. Mm-hmm. So stay tuned for that next week. And until then,
play games with your kids.